This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 16th of February, 2024. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today in the studio with me we have Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a recording, a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using our memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order with the most recent first on the list. And now let's take a look at this week's headlines. Cabbies reclaim rail station rank. Road open after year-long closure for bridge project. And exciting update on Silver Hill. And the first headline story, Daphne's.
Right, cabbies reclaim rail station rank. Taxi drivers relieved after 8 months' struggle. Independent taxi drivers in Winchester are relieved to be reclaiming the prime spots outside the railway station following an 8 month struggle on the opposite side of the road. WinTaxi's 4 year tender for the taxi rank directly outside the station, agreed by South Western Railway, SWR, in the summer, is being scrapped. Under a new deal, the rank will be returned to Hackney carriage drivers from Friday, March the 1st. Although disappointed, WinTax, which has pre-booking only vehicles, said if the Hackney drivers are willing to put up this much of a fight, then they deserve to take back the spots. Customers spoke of argy-bargy during the summer when the Hackney drivers were first forced to use a temporary rank on the other side of the road. The independent drivers said the change had damaged their business and confused customers, particularly elderly people who might not be comfortable using the app.
Road open after year-long closure for bridge project. A road in Winchester has reopened following the replacement of a 100-year-old bridge. Garnier Road has reopened to all traffic following a £1.5 million scheme by Hampshire County Council to replace Tun Bridge, a bridge that spans the Itchen Navigation. The road has remained open to pedestrians and cyclists whilst construction of the new bridge was underway, with other vehicles diverted. Councillor Nick Adams-King, the County Council's Cabinet Member for Universal Services, said, "The new bridge provides a structure that has a lifespan of 120 years and which meets modern traffic carrying standards. I appreciate that the scheme has caused some local disruption, and I would like to thank people once more for their patience whilst the construction work was underway. This was a complex engineering challenge, not least due to the presence of numerous utility cables that were embedded within the bridge. With the main element of the project now finished, our team will remain on site for a short while longer, finalising other elements of the scheme, such as improving the footpaths. The work on the bridge began last March and has seen the road and top section of the bridge replaced. Several ecological measures have been added to the bridge to safeguard wildlife, including bat roosts and swallow nest cups. New safety fencing has also been provided alongside a new highway drainage system to reduce the risk of flooding on Garnier Road. One of the businesses impacted by the closure of Garnier Road was the Handlebar Cafe. As previously reported, the cafe lost £10,000 in the first 3 months of the closure and faced further disruption by the works. Heather Evans, the director of Bespoke Biking CIC, which operates the Handlebar Cafe, told the Chronicle, "We are really delighted the road has reopened and that they managed to do it in February. There was a rumour it was going to be the 1st of March. It has been nearly a year and it has had a massive impact, but the community has really supported us. I think it will help traffic around Winchester, so it is good news. I don't think we realised how much people liked just driving down and popping in. And so if they can't just drive by, they don't like to walk in. We've been all right at weekends, especially when the sun shines, but we have noticed it during the week. So we're very happy the road has reopened."
Exciting update on Silver Hill. Winchester City Council has received an update on the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, also known as Silver Hill. At a Regeneration Cabinet Committee on Thursday, February the 8th, representatives from Jigsaw Consortium, Matt Walgar and Warwick Smither, gave Cabinet members an overview of how they are tackling the project. It is a huge redevelopment of the city centre between Friars Gate and the Broadway, including the bus station and medical centres at what was Friars Gate and St Clement's Partnership. Previous schemes have collapsed for legal and economic reasons. Mr Woolgar explained that the consortium has been undertaking meet-and-greet meetings across Winchester District to gather feedback on what residents do and do not want as part of the generation. Further information was also gathered through the use of the online engagement platform Commonplace. Mr Woolgar also said key themes which emerged included concerns over housing movement, transport and design, heritage and culture. During the meeting, he also told Cabinet members that a development delivery plan is being prepared within the next 6 months and is expected to be presented to the Cabinet in July for approval. He also said a development master plan will be put together in 9 to 12 months. The committee was also updated on the long-awaited demolition of Friars Gate Medical Centre, which has been completed now by the end of February. Once the site has been cleared, landscaping will take place to convert it into an open, meanwhile use space. Richard Baker from the City of Winchester Trust asked, "Has the council signed a contract with Jigsaw to develop and complete the regeneration of the central Winchester area?" The council officer, Dawn Adey, confirmed that a contract has been put in place, saying the council has signed a contract for this project. It's been signed and sealed. Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "I think it is great to see the progress. We can start to get excited. It's great that Friars Gate is down after all this time. It really opens up the area." Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "We are in a very exciting time. Thank you for all the work that has been done. I'm looking forward to the next meeting and the progress I'm sure we shall be seeing."
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Orty, Dorothy Irene, known as Dot, passed away peacefully on the 8th of February, 2024. Anne Bell passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital Winchester on the 19th of January 2024, aged 79 years. Benson, Doris Evelyn, passed away peacefully on the 23rd of January after a short illness. Browning, Shirley Janice, died peacefully at home in her sleep on the 31st of January 2024, aged 80 years. Casson, John and Mavis, died in Winchester on the 20th and 23rd of December. Finch, Daniel, died peacefully on the 3rd of February 2024, aged 87 years. Hall, Judith Marguerite, died peacefully at her home in Victoria, Canada, on the 31st of January 2024. Hayes, Joan, passed away peacefully on the 12th of January 2024, aged 93 years. Idioles, Jean Margaret, passed away peacefully at home on the 19th of January 2024, aged 99 years. Inda, née Medley, Jane, landlady of the Fox Inn Bramdean from 1985 to 2012, sadly passed away on the 22nd of January 2024, aged 71 years. Maybe, Richard, peacefully fell asleep on the 7th of February 2024, aged 76 years. Mayor, Michael, passed away quickly and peacefully at home on the 8th of February 2024, aged 72 years. Miller, Hazel Ann, passed away peacefully on the 8th of February 2024, at the age of 88. Peacock, Dorothy, May Webster, passed away peacefully in Winchester on the 3rd of February 2024, aged 80 years. And Richard, Donald William, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on January the 26th, aged 85. Christian comment has been written by Moira Redmond this week. The title is The Knock-On Effect of Being Nice. Thank you, Daphne.
More than 40 years ago, I was going to New York on a very low-budget trip with a friend. I told my aunt about it and she said, "I know someone in New York. You must get in touch with her." This surprised me, as Auntie May had scarcely been out of the British Isles, had certainly never been to the USA. "Oh, I've never met her," she went on, "but she will want to hear from you." What had happened was this. Her son Kevin, my cousin, was a medical student in London and became friendly with an American boy, Matty, who was a fan of English football. Kevin brought him up to Liverpool to stay with his mum so that they could attend a football match together. But Matty became ill during the visit and ended up in hospital, and my cousin had to return to London for his studies. So my Auntie May took on looking after this virtual stranger. She made sure he had what he needed, and she travelled by bus to be his only visitor in hospital. She talked to the phone to Matty's mom in New York, a very big and expensive deal back then, to reassure her. When he was discharged, she took him back to her house until he was okay to travel back to London. "Well, of course I did," she said about all this. "The poor boy was alone." Matty, who died in 2020, and Kevin both went on to distinguished careers as doctors. And the main beneficiaries of this story were me and my friend. When I hesitantly contacted Matty's mom in New York, she couldn't do enough for us, insisted on taking us both out for a very fancy meal in an expensive restaurant. We were nickel and diming it, so this was a huge treat. She bought us more food to take back to our miserable hotel room, paid for us to visit the Empire State Building, phoned us on our last day as she was worried we might have run out of money and she wanted to, quotes, lend us some. I have tried to do the same for any young visitors who come my way, but I didn't truly understand this story till I had children of my own and realised how she must have felt about my kindly aunt and why she wanted to make some return. If your child is ill on the other side of the world, can you hope for care like that? Two women thousands of miles apart who never met, but who understood each other totally. They were both solid Christians, which of course is not essential for goodness, and they wouldn't have put themselves in the gospel, far too humble. But I think of them both when I read in Matthew 25, I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I was sick, and you looked after me. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.
Thank you, Daphne. And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with carbon confusion, please?
Yes. Phil Gagg writes, I'm afraid that when I spoke at the Carbon Neutrality Open Forum, I may have caused some confusion. Chronicle, February the 8th. Currently, it is cars, not buses, that carry on average 1.25 people. Contrary to the impression I appear to have given according to your report. Most bus routes average about 12 passengers, apart from the park and ride buses that average about 8 passengers on each section of their route into and out of town. This means that if buses were to play a greater role in transport into and out of Winchester, road congestion would disappear. In slow-moving traffic, one bus takes up about the same amount of road space as 1.5 cars. If we could increase average bus loads through more frequent services and lower, or free, fares, we could match the London average loading of 20 passengers per bus. A total switch from cars would reduce the amount of road space taken up by traffic by 90% and would dispense with the need to provide parking spaces. Even a partial switch to buses would remove a lot of congestion. Greenhouse gas emissions, pollution, and noise would reduce considerably. It is tempting to imagine the opportunities this would give us for using all the extra space we would free up in central Winchester. More of our streets could be transformed, like the square has been transformed. There would be more room for pedestrians and cyclists, and there would be plenty of space on City Bridge for us to admire safely the City Mill and the Itchen. This could be just the start. I hope that planning for better bus services will be put at the heart of the Winchester Movement strategy. And that's from Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
The next letter is entitled Barbarism Proof. It's from Mike Sherwood of South Wanston. He refers to a letter by Mr. Melton in the Chronicle of January 25th, who disagrees with my description of the fox as a beautiful creature, and tells how his uncle used to shoot them when they raided his hen house. In similar circumstances, I would have done the same thing, though I might not like it. What I cannot stomach, however, is a bunch of people on horseback with a pack of hounds pursuing for pleasure a fox until its heart and lungs are bursting with fear and exertion, and then watching as it is ripped apart while still alive. And make no mistake, this is what happens. For as a boy, I was unfortunate enough to see a kill, and it was not a pretty spectacle. The late, great Thomas Hardy once wrote, The prevalence of those sports which consist in the pleasure of watching a fellow creature, weaker and less favoured than ourselves, in its struggles to escape the death agony we mean to inflict by treacherous contrivance, seems to me one of the many convincing proofs that they have not yet emerged from barbarism. Obviously, I could not have put it better myself. Mike Sherwood, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
Frank Devoy writes, since my letter of January the 20th regarding Flick Drummond's deplorable voting record, her latest leaflet arrived, headlined with a denial that she had voted to allow sewage dumping to continue. The facts are that in October 2021, she and 267 colleagues voted against Lords Amendment 45 to the Environment Bill. It proposed a new duty on water companies to demonstrate progressive reductions in harm caused. Harm, for instance, like the, quotes, emergency dumping, which Southern Water recently planned to inflict on the test at Chilbolton, until concerted public pressure forced a rethink. As recently as January 25, Mrs. Drummond and 291 colleagues also voted to permit the practice until 2038 and beyond. Her government has yet to define a date by which illegal overflows must cease altogether. She talks of a £3.1 billion investment since 2020 and completely ignores the fact that the water companies were sold unencumbered, yet by 2022 had been saddled with £54 billion of debt. That now costs the average customer an estimated £80 a year in higher bills. Meanwhile, £66 billion has been paid out in dividends, money which could have been invested in water and sewage infrastructure, so preventing the crisis from ever occurring. Meanwhile, our bills are rising by more than inflation. To summarise Mrs. Drummond's position, dumping will be difficult and very expensive to stop, so she has no choice but to vote to allow it to continue for a very long time. The new Environment Act undoubtedly concerns some good measures, but they are half-hearted, and timescales for remedying the issues and stopping the discharges are indeterminate. Mrs. Drummond has never voted to stop sewage discharges. And that comes from Frank Devoy, Hillside Close, Take Down, Winchester.
Paul Hum has a slightly different view on the same topic, and his letter is entitled Standing Ground. Bravo, Flick Drummond, for standing her ground over all the myths and politicking around sewage so regularly pumped out by people who should know better. No one would even know there was a problem with storm overflows if the Conservatives hadn't put monitoring in place. Talk about shooting the messenger. And certainly not the Lib Dems, who make so much of poo but have done absolutely nothing ever to solve it except to moan about others. It stinks. Who cares what Fergal, a good heart, not Sharky, has to say either? Another celebrity who should stick to what he does best. Gary Lineker, take a note. What Mrs. Drummond has been criticised for goes to the very heart of what is wrong with this country. Why can't people take responsibility instead of blaming others? Why can't people just pause flushing the loo when it's pelting down to save the environment they profess to care so much about? Unless they can bash a Tory for it. When did a selfless act like this become a problem while the Victorian drains are improved? As Mrs. Drummond said, we all produce wastewater and we should all take responsibility for it. This politician of integrity is a breath of fresh air and she has my vote. And that's from Paul Hum, a fellow of the Institute of Biomedical Science, Park Road, Winchester.
Okay.
Well, I could. There's another letter, a little less appreciative and congratulatory of Flick Drummond, so I'll share it. It's from Robert Marcus, Wanston Road, Wanston. "Sir, Madam, I had to contain myself from laughter when reading Flick Drummond's leaflet dropped through my door last week. She recommends Winchester residents stop flushing their loos when it's raining to prevent sewage flooding into our rivers. Next, they will recommend not drinking water when there's a drought. Is it time for a general election so we can flush this Conservative government down the toilet for good? Question mark. Robert Marcus, Wanston Road, Wanston."
And this next letter is from Ginny Ward, headed Hospital Concern. HHFT's hospital plan is allegedly exciting for Winchester, but just because they say it is doesn't mean it really is. Think Emperor's New Clothes. The plan strongly disadvantaged Winchester and surrounding area to the south and west and involved dismantling most acute services. Winchester deserves a full acute hospital, not a downgraded shell providing community-style services with some simple surgery added in, whilst Basingstoke gains a shiny new hospital and almost all of Winchester's acute beds and A&E. The urgent treatment centre proposed for Winchester cannot treat 40% of A&E attendances, open 24/7, but many elsewhere have reduced hours because of staffing, and where are these GPs coming from to staff it? The urgent treatment centre is for more minor injuries and illnesses. Maternity. No specialist doctors in the birthing unit at Winchester, similar to home birth. No epidurals or quick response for complications. RCM birthplace report says 40% first births and 10% of subsequent births may need urgent transfer. Surgery. Only simple surgery and day surgery. Any complications transferred to the acute hospital site. So Winchester is not really an acute hospital with no acute medical, surgical or critical care on site. Children needing inpatient treatment will not be in Winchester, but 15 or 23 miles away. Ambulance services. Ambulances will take more patients to Southampton. Fact. Policy already sends patients to the nearest appropriate hospital. Will Southampton Hospital cope? It took 50 minutes for a private ambulance to come when we called 999 with the hold-ups at Southampton, so potentially destabilising an already stressed health system. HHFT is centralising services away from Winchester. Who suspected their formation would result in dismantling the Royal Hants County Hospital? They gave us empty promises. We must speak up before it is too late. And that's from Ginny Ward, Main Road, Littleton.
Pedestrian plight. For 2 weeks running, you have carried photographs of three rows of tables and chairs on the west pavement of Drury Street, as if to demonstrate that they can pose no problem for pedestrians. One photo even carried a picture of our MP with arms outstretched. Remember Monty Python's Ministry for Silly Walks? However, there are no signs of customers sitting at those tables or of waiters attending to them. Hardly surprising during a rain-swept winter. Of course, pushchairs and the visually impaired will be able to get past in those conditions, but it's a very different story in the summer. While outdoor chairs and tables add to the animation of the city and should be permitted where feasible, it is a fact that the plight of pedestrians is systematically ignored in Winchester. Take the very beginning of the South Downs Way, outside the National Trust Mill in Bridge Street. Anyone wanting to walk the way and cross over to the weirs has to take their life in their hands. There is no indication whatever to drivers that there will be pedestrians regularly trying to cross there. It's high time pedestrians were given greater priority and cars and businesses required to take them properly into account. And that letter's from Mrs. A. Wilkinson, Eastgate Street, Winchester.
Mike Nell of Mornington Drive Tech Down writes, I just completed the Hampshire Perspectives, the County Council's consultation asking residents to help the council decide which services to reduce to save money. I did this while waiting at Winchester bus station for the next 86 to Whitchurch. Route 86 is a critical link for us older disabled residents of villages north of Winchester, which only runs at best hourly or 2 hourly for a large chunks of the day, not at all on Sundays or bank holidays. The prospect of reducing this fragile, unreliable link is horrifying at a time when it's clear to all that net zero depends heavily on more efficient public transport. Mike Nell of Take Down Winchester.
Martin Holmes writes, many of your readers will have welcomed the news that funding provision has been made for an additional 75 police officers in Hampshire, increasing the total of extra officers since March 2020 to 725, Chronicle, February the 1st. One person who appears to be excited about the increase in police numbers, both at the local level and nationally, is the Tory candidate for Winchester at the next general election, who has highlighted the figures in her early campaign literature. But despite the Police and Crime Commissioners, that's PCCs, additional officers, Hampshire Constabulary has fewer officers today than it did in 2010. Home Office statistics show that on March the 31st, 2010, there were 3,748 full-time equivalent, FTE, officers in Hampshire. Under the Tory-led governments from 2010 to 2019, the number of officers in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight was cut to under 2,700 as part of nationwide cuts. The current government's police uplift programme has only partly reversed that reduction. As of September the 30th, 2023, there were 3,362 FTE police officers, some 10% fewer than in 2010. Moreover, the current position in Hampshire does not compare favourably with the rest of England. For the country as a whole, FTE police officer numbers recovered to an all-time high in March 2023. They fell again slightly in the following 6 months, but remained a little over the level achieved in 2010. The PCC can be excused for not mentioning this. She did not preside over the deep cuts to police numbers in the county between 2010 and 2019, and has made progress in meeting the public's desire for more officers on the streets. But Mrs. Drummond was MP for Portsmouth South between 2015 to 17 and an unquestioning supporter of the government when police numbers were falling. I do not recall her speaking out then against the cuts in Hampshire. Her failure to put the recent trend in context causes me, at least, to question her other electioneering claims. And that's from Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And in our final letter this week, Jane Philpott is baffled at family's plan rejection. I find it baffling that John and Holly Wright's application to grow mushrooms and live on their own land and run a forest school in the countryside in South Wanston has been rejected. Chronicle, February the 8th. The site blends into the countryside and is tiny in comparison with the recently approved industrial EV superhub site at Three Maids Hill, which also incorporates a restaurant, on-site facilities and a play area. John and Holly's land is on the edge of the village, surrounded by trees. A couple of days a week, a few cars might be evident in the parking spaces they have created for the Forest School, Mini Moons and the Drum Circle. Otherwise, the only reason you would know anything was going on would be the sound of children whilst they are playing. Recent studies have shown that a physical space is crucial for play, particularly for under fives. It is key to a child's physical and psychological development. John's business, Mindful Mushrooms, seems a far cry from an industrial process, as he intends to sell mushrooms at Winchester Market and make tinctures from them and teach others the health benefits of mushrooms. John and Holly's work provides opportunities for all ages to connect with nature and each other, and children and adults alike can learn how to find peace and tranquility in the world around us, which, as we all know, is very important in this day and age. They have support for their work from a wide community who would also be devastated if John and Holly's appeal was turned down. I wish John and Holly success in their appeal and hope that their plans will be approved. And that letter is from Jane Philpott, Wright's Close, South Wanstead.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll carry on now with editorial comment, first person and Belgarum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with Common Sense Prevails at Taxi Rank. Thank you.
Last summer, the Chronicle reported the row at the railway station over the use of the taxi rank on the city side. For decades it had been used by the Hackney Carriage drivers before the right to park was transferred to Wintax. The issue was that Hackney carriages can be hailed in the street. Passengers just get into the vehicle and away you go. Wintax vehicles have to be pre-booked, these days via smartphones and apps. The Hackney cabs were pushed away from the forecourt, further up the other side of Station Road to a shorter rank. Some people, probably younger people, might say, hey, so what? But it caused confusion for many, especially as there was little, if any, public consultation. Elderly or disabled people are much less likely to have smartphones or to be familiar with how modern booking works. For disabled people, the Hackney rank was further away from the station. So we welcome the news that South Western Railway has backtracked and handed the forecourt back to the Hackney cabs. This is how it should be. Change is not always good, and in this case the previous setup worked well. The Hackney drivers excuse me, kicked up a fuss, all right. And the public reaction was such that South Western Railway felt it had to act. Whether financial reasons were a factor is unclear, as this is confidential. But as a spokesman for Wintax refreshingly told us, if they, the Hackney drivers, are willing to put up this much of a fight, we thought we should let them have it. They rely on picking up from the station and do not have the same luxury as we do as a company. We don't need the train station. We are a very good and well-known company. With all the grief we have had, it's just not worth it.
Now, first person. Kimberly Barber writes about Charity Challenge in first person this week. Daphne.
With various items sorted into three carrier bags, I headed to my nearest charity shop, hoping they could take in some donations. But how wrong could I be? The bags, two normal-sized carrier bags and one larger bag for life, were packed with children's clothes, toys, books, bric-a-brac, some of my clothes and a few things pinched from my other half's wardrobe. I do have some idea of what they can and can't take. Anything slightly ropey, stained, stretched, etc., I recycle as rags or use as cleaning cloths at home. Holy socks are excellent for cleaning windows. Dog-eared books or any with torn pages are either left at the free book point or chucked out. Same for all the other items in the bags. Basically, anything that I would not buy does not go into the charity shop bags. So, with the weather not looking likely for a fair weather car boot sale clearance anytime soon, and space becoming a bit of an issue at home, three carrier bags of bits were flung into my car boot. Resisting the urge to drive around for weeks with them in my boot, this has happened, I drove into Bishop's Waltham, an ideal place to run a few errands and also get rid of these bags. However, on entering the first charity shop, the woman looked horrified as I stumbled in with three bags in hand. I instantly realised my mistake. One is okay. Two is pushing it, but three? Well, that was instant dismissal. Not only had I disturbed her from a quiet morning, there was no one in the shop, I was having the audacity that she might like to handle three bags of donations. Smiling, I asked her if she was taking donations. No, came the rather stern reply. Thrown off guard, I awkwardly muttered something along the lines of, okay, thanks, I'll just take all this home again then. To which she looked distastefully at what was in my hand and pointed to the smallest bag. What's in that one? She asked. Mainly ladies' clothes, I replied. To which she said, I might be able to take that one, but no more. I left it with her, thanking her for her time, but not stopping to look at anything in the shop, let alone buy anything. I walked to the next charity shop, and they too said they could not take the bags, as they did not take children's items. The two remaining bags were mainly kids' clothes, toys and books. They were very apologetic and nice, but said it did not fit in with the type of charity shop they run. Who knew there were classes of charity shops? Turns out families, especially young children, are not welcome in this one. No need for that type of thing in Bishop's Waltham. Again, I stumbled out, two bags in hand, and contemplated driving to the Household Waste Recycling Centre up the road with them, and throwing them hard into the landfill skip in a rage, but then realised I would need to book an appointment. Also, my green consciousness pricked. What would Greta Thunberg think, throwing perfectly good things into landfill? Shoot, could the bags live in my car boot forever? Undeterred, I drove to Wickham. I walked into Revitalise and, expecting another battle, I asked if they could take two bags of donations while mentally preparing to also try the shop over the road or the many shops in Fareham's West Street. The reception I got here was 100 miles away from Bishop's Waltham. The woman was friendly, smiley, chatty, just very nice. Of course I can, came the reply. Thank you very much. I popped the bags down, filled in my gift aid details, and stayed to look at the other bits for a while before buying a few DVDs. I left here feeling good. These unwanted things may find a new home, while also making the charity a few pounds. Donating to charity should not be a battle. How the volunteers handle the customer is a vital way of ensuring people stay engaged with the charity. And, more importantly, stay donating, whether that be by dropping in unwanted goods, buying items, or giving cash. That said, I suppose my main learning from this frustrating day is to never take more than one bag to the charity shop at any one time.
Well, Robert Belgarum always looks at the news from an alternative point of view. What do we have this week, Nick?
We've got one piece this week, which is about Robin 10 on an expert panel. A 10-year-old boy from Hampshire joined a panel of high-flying experts at an annual trade show to explain why he wants to be a chef. Robin Ashley, from Valley Park in Chandler's Ford, was part of the skills panel alongside his head teacher, Dawn Harrison, at Business South's 16th local produce trade show at the Hilton at the Utilita Bowl, previously the Aegeus Bowl, on February the 6th. The St Francis Church of England pupil spoke to a room of 60 food and drink exhibitors and hundreds of buyers to explain why he has dreams of becoming a chef. Robin was among a cross-generational panel, including first-generation Romsey farmer Emma Hunt, retired Michelin chef Herbert Berger, and head chefs Andrew Galt of Street Pub Co. and Jamie Holmes from Hilton at the Utilita Bowl. "I have never done anything like this before, but it's a good experience. I mostly want to be a chef because my dad is one and he has inspired me," said Robin. His head teacher said, "I'm incredibly proud of Robin. He gave some fantastic advice and some really important messages to the grown-ups in the room." After hearing the top chef speak about the pressures of the industry, Robin said, "I think I should still be a chef when I grow up. I would like to have my own restaurant. That would be really good to achieve."
Now, let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Well, what have we got? On Wednesday, the 21st of February, Daisy Shute and James Walker are bringing their UK tour to Winchester. They are acclaimed folk musicians, and they will be on at the Railway in St Paul's Hill, Winchester. On Thursday, the 22nd of February, WSA Exchange presents Fashion Thinkers with Charles Jeffrey. This is at 5:30 p.m. and it's free to get in, and it's at the Winchester School of Art in the centre of Winchester, in Park Avenue. That sounds very nice. Then we've got on Tuesday the 5th of March, there's an afternoon lecture on the Gallipoli campaign. This is at the Gurkha Museum. It also includes a Gurkha curry lunch. It starts at 10:30 p.m, but I think it must be a.m. if it's having a lunch. Otherwise, it would be rather late. And tickets for that are £50. On Saturday, the 9th of March, there's a chance to see Vanya at the National Theatre being shown on the screen at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Tickets are available for £16, and that starts at 7 p.m. And the final one, also on Saturday, the 9th of March, Baroque Masterpieces. The nave of the Winchester Cathedral will resound with magnificent Baroque trumpets and timpani as the Wainfleet singers are joined by Florilegium for a brilliant evening of Baroque masterpieces. Tickets are available from kate.spencer15@gmail.com and are £15 to £50, I assume, depending on where you sit. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 17th of February, the sun will set at 5:24 p.m. And on Wednesday the 21st of February, the sun will rise at 7:07 a.m. and will set at 5:32 p.m. And now, on to items of general news. Paul, would you like to kick us off, please?
Volunteers join bid to bring back elm trees. a group of volunteers planted Dutch elm disease-resistant saplings in a once-neglected graveyard thanks to a new initiative supported by the County Council. The Friends of St Giles's Hill Graveyard planted three resistant elms after an elm expert visited Winchester last year and advised the group on what to grow. The saplings in the graveyard off Alsford Road in Winchester should be flowering in 6 to 8 years and are the first Dutch elm disease-resistant trees to be planted. The Hampshire Forest Partnership, with the support of the Tree Council, is funding disease-resistant hybrid elm trees to help nature recovery. Projects must be able to allow the trees to grow to full size, and the County Council scheme is particularly interested in seeing them back in community spaces. Since the 1960s, elm trees across England have been destroyed by Dutch elm disease, which was accidentally introduced to Europe in the early 20th century. The disease has killed nearly all the mature elms in Britain, which is approximately 60 to 100 million trees. Anna Stewart, one of the Friends of St Giles's Graveyard, said, "The graveyard is small and was much neglected for 70 years. Our group has been taking care of this hidden treasure for the last 7 years. We are fully constituted, have 7 trustees and have volunteers from the local community. Work days are once a month. We always have coffee, biscuits and chat. We hope the rare white letter hairstreak butterfly will colonise the elms." Funds were provided by Catherine and Joan Ferrier. Winchester College is to be congratulated on planting the first Dutch elm disease-resistant elm tree saplings last year. At this point in time, there are no mature elms resistant to Dutch elm disease in the Winchester area. The Dees will return and take out any non-resistant elms. Hampshire Forest Partnership is giving away free resistant elm, and this is a great way for local communities, landowners and Winchester City Council to give a much needed boost to biodiversity as well as bringing back elm to our landscape. The three resistant trees were planted on Saturday, February the 3rd, and there's an interesting photograph of the volunteers smiling but also digging in some of the trees. Very good.
Flipping Great Pancake Race. Hundreds braved the wet weather at Winchester Cathedral to witness the annual pancake race. Tuesday, February the 13th, marked Shrove Tuesday, along with the return of Winchester Rotary's popular pancake race in the cathedral's outer close. This year, the race was in aid of Winchester Hospice. 42 teams, including local businesses, charities, schools and city councillors, competed for prizes, including best attire, best name and overall race winner. With their frying pans at the ready, competitors had to run a stretch of 38 metres and flip their pancakes 3 times at the beginning, middle and end of their leg before handing them over to their teammate. The Royal Hotel Winchester team was the overall winner, coming first in heat and semi-final races and beating the Carter Jonas team in the final. Pablo Ramirez of the Royal Hotel team said, "It feels really good to win. We were running for a good cause to raise funds and support a charity and to help those who need it. So I'm more than happy that we could help for that purpose." Other winners included the team from Tesco, who managed to win the best name prize for Pirates of the Carrot Bean Isle, and Winchester Round Table, who wore the best costume. Winchester Rotary President Les Haswell said, "I think today has gone very well. We had a record number, 42 entrants, and we got everyone across the finish line without injury, which is quite a feat. It's been good fun. The weather's been a bit damp and awful, but everyone enjoyed themselves and got into the spirit of things, and at the end of the day, they've probably managed to raise a few £1,000 for Winchester Hospice." Rotary is one of these organisations that everyone thinks is very good until they think, well, actually, what does it do? And today is an example of what Rotary does. He gets involved with the community and community projects and helps to raise funds. Today, we are raising funds for the Winchester Hospice. Originally, it was to get the hospice up and running. We presented them with a cheque 5 years ago, but it needs to keep running, and that's why we're doing it.
Firefighters battle to save Curdridge Country Home. A large fire ripped through a mansion, destroying the country home. Firefighters were sifting through the damaged building to try and find the cause. 14 fire crews rushed to Curdridge to tackle a domestic fire on Sunday, February the 11th. More than 60 firefighters worked through the night in Curdridge Lane, arriving around 7:30 p.m. to find the roof and first floor of a property being engulfed by flames. Worried neighbours arrived at the scene to see if they could help. However, there were no injuries, with all the occupants having safely evacuated. Neighbour Phil Summerow, a retired dentist who lives opposite, said, "We were watching a film when my wife stood up and said she could see the flames, and we realised it was a house on fire. I went over there to see if I could help. We didn't know if anyone was trapped. I called the fire brigade on my way over. Luckily, everybody was out and the fire brigade was there. It was pretty dramatic. It's certainly very upsetting for the owners who have been there for about 35 years. The fire had ripped through the roof. It was completely unexpected. We obviously feel very sorry for the owners, who are now presumably homeless for some time." A spokesperson for the fire service said 14 fire engines were in attendance at the height of the incident, along with the aerial ladder, specialist water carrier, and environmental protection vehicles. The cause is thought to be non-suspicious but undetermined. And there is a picture of what's looking like a small mansion house and its roof properly ablaze.
Families bid to fund dog as autism helper. A mum of four has organised a second fundraising event in the hope of gaining enough money to afford an autism assistance dog for her son. Emily Lowndes from King's Barton will be running a car boot sales stall at the Cattle Market car park in Worthy Lane to raise money for a support dog to help her son better deal with his autism. This will be on Sunday, February the 18th, and follows a fundraising disco for the same cause on Friday the 16th of February at Week Community Centre. Emily, aged 41, who works as a paediatric nurse at Shepherd's Down, a special school in Compton, is aiming to raise £12,000 to be able to afford a four-legged friend for her seven-year-old Stephen Hudson. The mum of four said, "Need a new year house clear out? Does your shed need a tidy up ready for spring? Do your children need to clear out their rooms? All very familiar in my house. Plus, it's a great feeling to get rid of things you don't use anymore. The car boot sale is open from 7:30 a.m. Sunday, February the 18th. And the support for Stephen Just Giving campaign has so far raised just under £2,000.
Mystery of disappearing city centre generator solved. A large generator that took up pavement space in Winchester city centre has been removed. The generator was on Middlebrook Street and was installed at the beginning of February. It was removed on Friday. Despite its proximity to Wenzel's The Bakers and Sainsbury's, staff at both businesses had no knowledge of the reason it was there, with a manager at Sainsbury's saying he had heard it had been put in while work was carried out on local wireless networks. A Chronicle reporter saw Openreach engineers at the generator. However, the company also denied any involvement, with a spokeswoman saying, "We're looking into it, but it's extremely unlikely that it's ours." A Hampshire County Council consent to carry out works on the public highways notice was located near to the generator, listing the applicant as Joe Smith of SM5 Developments. The mystery was solved with a comment on the Chronicle Facebook page saying that the equipment was needed for nearby building work in a property tucked away from the street. And there's a picture of this generator, quite large, just between the entrance to Sainsbury's and the shop that's now on the corner called Wenzel's. And also it's right next to the greengrocer's stall. It must have been a bit of a nuisance while it was there. I imagine they're all jolly glad it's gone.
Recycling change may be on way. Changes are coming for Winchester residents as they recycle at home. But civic chiefs don't want to say too much about it at the moment. They hope that soon plastic tubs, trays and cartons will be accepted for recycling in domestic green bins. Hampshire County Council, which runs the recycling operation, is considering making major changes. Following a public consultation, the City Council is pressing the county to introduce co-mingling, with one bin accepting all material for recycling. Plastic, glass, paper, card, glass as well as plastic pots, trays and cartons. Senior City Councillor Kelsey Lerney said the consultation revealed the public wants a simplified system. City Councillor Leader Martin Todd said the least said at the moment the better. He told Cabinet, "If we tell people not to put pots and tubs in and then later say they can, it will be a mess. Best to keep quiet for the time being." New glass recycling banks have been installed at St Catherine's Park and Ride at Bar End after local supermarkets have removed their tanks. Meanwhile, food waste is going to be collected by March 31st, 2026 at the latest, the Cabinet decided.
New drink is a hit on the high street. This is by a journalist called Sophie Parr. We've not come across her yet. Winchester has been welcoming a new drink on its bustling high street. Bubble tea, also known as boba, is the new craze. The tapioca-infused Taiwanese drink is adored by many thanks to social media, with content on platforms like TikTok and YouTube showcasing many different versions. Three shops that mainly sell boba populate the high street. Boba Moon at the top of the high street, CUPP Cup Bubble Tea next to Waterstones, and Mubu just across from Poundland. Thea Clifford, who goes to Peter Simmons Sixth Form College close to the city centre, said, "The variety and amount of options you get is much more appealing. It means I can get something new each time. The texture of the bubbles and popping them makes the drink much more exciting. Also, the bitterness of the coffee is off-putting. So the sweet flavour of the fruit bubble teas is much more enticing." This is true. I mean, first when I began to read this, I wondered if it was April the 1st.
Oh, no, bubble tea is definitely a thing.
Yes.
Daphne.
Work to fix Danger Junction faces threat. Hundreds of residents have supported improvement ideas for a dangerous junction, but the County Council has said the plan still might not happen. Hampshire County Council insists an improvement scheme for the Cart and Horses Junction, with the A33 and B3047 in Kingsworthy, is reliant on a decision by central government. The council launched a consultation on two multi-million pound long-term options of either a signalised junction or two compact roundabouts over the summer. More than 880 responses were received, with feedback showing strong support for both design proposals. The junction is considered one of the worst in the district for accidents. But to move forward, the County Council is depending on National Highways to include the improvements in its M3 Junction 9 plans, which will be determined in May. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "We are grateful to all those who took the time to provide their views on the options. Their responses, together with the initial designs, are very helpful in informing our discussions with National Highways. I have read the consultation feedback, and it is clear people currently find the junction uncomfortable to use. However, we are unable to press ahead with improvements to the junction without funding. We must wait for the Secretary of State for Transport's decision about National Highways M3 Junction 9 improvement scheme, which is expected in May. It is possible that the Minister may agree with the National Highways scheme, but disagree that there is a case for improvements to the Cart and Horses Junction. This would mean there would be no funding to deliver a scheme. If that is the outcome, we would have no choice but to wait for another funding opportunity." Councillor Jackie Porter, who's been campaigning for a safer junction since 2014, said, "The number of responses to the local consultation showed the level of local public interest, and the Chronicle highlighted it as one of the 5 worst junctions in the county, and that certainly raised its profile. Closer analysis of the results showed a high percentage of car drivers preferred the roundabout, but numerous cyclists used the junction too, and they could see problems with the design. But the key point is, who pays? The county says it has no money to do this work, and if National Highways won't fund it as part of their M3 Junction 9 plan, then the campaign to find the money will continue. Unless the County Council bites the bullet and says it will come up with the money to make the junction safer, it will stay as it is, the design on paper." Fellow ward councillor and campaigner councillor Steve Cramoisan said, "The response from people who live in the Worthies and Itchen Valley and beyond to our campaign for a safer Cart and Horses Junction and the consultation has been fantastic. Without public support, the County Council consultation would not have happened. The two options presented each have pros and cons for road users. Some car drivers prefer roundabouts because they potentially offer greater capacity at peak times. Other drivers prefer the assurance of traffic lights informing all road users of the junction of when it is safe to proceed with caution and when you should stop. People walking or cycling across the junction generally prefer the traffic light option. We should all be mindful that the County Council has made no commitment to funding. Until the money is found and the County Council is firmly committed to upgrading the junction, we will continue our campaign to get the job done."
Choristers win Star Wars Music Grammy. Winchester Cathedral choristers have won a Grammy for the soundtrack to a Star Wars video game. Stephen Barton, composer and former chorister, Gordy Harb, and the choristers won Best Soundtrack for Video Games and Other Interactive Media for Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Mr. Barton said, "A special moment for me on this was that we had the choristers from the Pilgrim School in Winchester come and record on this and add those smooth jazz chords. It reminded me about music teachers being the most important thing, so I dedicate this to mine." In a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, he said, "So proud of the boys and the big part they played in some of the most emotional and wonderful moments in the game. Congrats to you all and Andy. You are Grammy winners." Back in 2022, Mr. Barton commissioned the choristers for a secret mission at Abbey Road Studios in London. The choristers sing with the Winchester Cathedral Choir and are educated at the Pilgrim School. Andrew Lumsden, Director of Music at Winchester Cathedral, said, This is fantastic news for all of us at the Cathedral and the Pilgrim School, but particularly for the choristers. They are thrilled to have won the award and are over the moon with excitement. It is also very exciting that we have similar projects already in the pipeline. Mr. Barton added, "It was an absolute pleasure and privilege to be able to have the choristers join the very small number of musicians who have recorded official music for the Star Wars musical universe. They were, as always, consummate professionals, effortlessly taking to the world of studio soundtrack recording, click tracks, and some very difficult music to learn and record extremely fast. The music they recorded that day has been heard by tens of millions of people already, and we have heard players describe their moments as breathtakingly beautiful and spellbinding. For me, it was just a joy to be able to come full circle, and it absolutely reminded me that most of the skills I use daily as a professional musician came from being in the choir and at Pilgrims, and that the choir is world class as ever. On behalf of myself, Gordy Harb, Respawn, EA and Disney, a huge thanks to them and the staff. We are all very proud of their work." Pictures to accompany that article. One with the choristers stood on the steps outside the front of the Abbey Road studios, and of them going across the famous zebra crossing outside.
Thank you, Nick. Paul, what have you got?
Four arrested and bailed on suspicion of thefts. Four Hampshire people have been arrested in Winchester on suspicion of theft offences. Two men and two women from Southampton were arrested by police on Wednesday, February the 7th, at Boots on Winchester High Street, after reports they were acting suspiciously. A post on the Winchester Police Facebook page says, "Yesterday afternoon, officers were alerted to four suspicious individuals in Boots on the High Street. We attended and conducted some inquiries, as a result of which we arrested two males and two females for the offences of theft and going equipped to steal. But upon a searching a vehicle we believed was linked to these people, we located a number of items that are often used to assist in theft. Due to what was found and the evidence we had already identified, an inspector authorised officers to conduct searches of their home addresses in Southampton. Late last night, officers from Winchester NPT, whatever that means, attended two addresses in Southampton and located in excess of £1,000 worth of suspected stolen goods from a number of retailers. To allow us to continue the investigation, all four individuals were released on bail with conditions."
Tree protected despite being spared axe. Civic chiefs have issued a protection order on a tree in a Winchester store car park, even though the plan that had threatened it has been amended. The hornbeam stands by the car park at Home Base off Eastern Lane in Winall. The building's owners, Royal London, had last year planned to chop it down as part of a redevelopment of the site. That sparked a temporary tree protection order, a TPO, which is still in place, even though Royal London has changed its proposals for a drive-through, which was granted permission last November. Council tree officer John Bartlett said the tree had important visual amenity value and was worthy of protection. He said it is visible as you come off the roundabout to Home Base. Danny Simmons, agent for Royal London, objected to the TPO. He told the planning committee, "Under the amended scheme, the tree is retained and we have protected the root area. Royal London intended to implement this scheme, and accordingly the tree is no longer under threat. The interim TPO forced Royal London to change the scheme to ensure the tree was retained. Royal London remain of the view that the hornbeam is not of outstanding quality or worthy of a TPO. The interim TPO should be withdrawn. The reason we continue to object is partly a matter of principle, but also, if confirmed, it will place a legal charge on the site which we want to avoid. Mr. Bartlett said the tree is worthy of a TPO, and if it is removed, the tree is immediately vulnerable. The planning committee discussed the threat to an unprotected tree if Royal London did not implement its current scheme, and the committee unanimously approved the TPO. And that's accompanied by a picture of the hornbeam. It's not a large tree, but it's quite graceful. It has bare branches, of course, because it's winter, and they look lovely against the winter sky. It would be a shame to see it go.
No date for demolition. No date has been set for the demolition of Winchester's biggest eyesore, a meeting heard. The River Park Leisure Centre has lain empty for several years since the opening of the new sports centre at Bar End and has been targeted by vandals and graffiti artists. It is part of the site the City Council proposes to dispose of to Southampton University as it expands its School of Art campus in Park Avenue. Green Councillor Malcolm Wallace asked the City Council's Cabinet about the declining state of the building, constructed after a blaze in 1987. It's difficult to understand the delays and why a site in a prime Winchester location is being left to go to rack and ruin. Local campaigners want the site to be retained as a public space, arguing the area was left to the city for public recreation. It was last used about 3 years ago and has been replaced by the Sport and Leisure Centre in Bar End. The Cabinet was told that funds are in place for the demolition. County Council leader Martin Todd told the Security Committee, "There will come a time when the building will need to be demolished. We haven't yet set a date of when that time is going to be." A few days later, when the issue was raised again at Cabinet, he said, "We have no plans to demolish it until we know what will replace it. When we know what is coming, that is the time to look at an integrated process of taking down the building and putting up a new one."
Illuminating TEDx returns. What can this mean? Tickets are already selling fast as the first four speakers are revealed for this year's TEDx Winchester. The independent self-organised event is licensed by TED in the spirit of ideas worth sharing, and it is supported by the University of Winchester and Dutton Gregory Solicitors. The theme of this year's event, the fourth time it has taken place, is Illuminate. Speakers will come from the diverse worlds of technology, fashion, diversity and art to share their ideas and stories in 18-minute presentations throughout the day. The first four TEDx Winchester speakers have been announced this week. They are Jenny Mazels, an illustrator, pop-up book creator and lecturer; Tiffany St. James, a digital strategist and founder of consultancy Transmute; Emily Munsell Holden, a Winchester resident and wild swimmer; and Pascal Mathias, an associate vice president, EDI and social justice, and a senior teaching fellow in fashion marketing and management at the Winchester School of Art in the University of Southampton. The curator, Jan Carlisle, said, "We're thrilled to be able to run this event for the fourth time. We're keen to make this event as inclusive as possible. Thanks to increased sponsorship, we've been able to reduce our ticket prices to see and hear world-class speakers. There is great enthusiasm in Winchester for an event that brings together a spirit of curiosity and idea sharing." TEDx Winchester will be held at the West Down Centre of University of Winchester at Romsey Road, Friday, June the 14th, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. The Vice-Chancellor of the University of Winchester, Professor Sarah Greer, said, "The TEDx community is a melting pot of local ideas that have global resonance, and I have no doubt that some of the ideas explored at TEDx Winchester will help change the world." Tickets are available at TEDxWinchester.com.
Pensioners' anger over appalling state of loos. A pensioner has blasted the City Council over the appalling state of the public toilets in the city centre. Julian Perkins spoke to the Cabinet about his experience of using the disabled toilets in Market Lane, the busiest in the district. He said, "We play host to hundreds of thousands of tourists, and there is a constant stream of complaints on the major media sites about the appalling state of the disabled facilities." He said he had first complained in January 2023 and questioned why refurbishment funds had been allocated, but nothing had been done. The City Council is committed to spending £700,000 upgrading toilets across the district, but initially Market Lane was scheduled to be the last to be upgraded. Council leader Martin Todd said managers had apologised to Mr Perkins. He said last October an extra cleaner had been taken on to solely work on the Market Lane and Abbey Gardens toilets, and complaints had stopped. Initially, the refurbishment work was tendered, but no firm put in a bid. That issue has been rectified, and work is expected to start at the end of this month, said Councillor Todd. The manager who oversees the cleaning has left the council, and a replacement is being recruited.
Pubs among UK's cosiest. Two Winchester pubs have been named in the top 10 cosiest pubs in the South West by South Western Railway. The Wickham Arms and the King Alfred made the list, placing at 5th and 10th respectively. The research took a number of aspects into consideration, including ambiance, quietness, comfort, Sunday dinner reviews, and the number of Google reviews. All the data was compiled to create a score out of 100. The Wickham Arms on Kingsgate Street placed 5th with an overall cosiness score of 59, while the King Alfred on Saxon Road, Hyde, placed 10th with a score of 45. The data gave a short summary of the reasoning for each of the top 5 cosiest pubs. Wrapping up the list of the top 5 cosiest pubs in the South West is the Wickham Arms in Winchester. Nestled between the cathedral and the 14th century college, this opulent country pub is enveloped in rich historical surroundings. The 18th century pub is filled with quirky bric-a-brac, including old school desks, hats, flags and prints, and also features 14 cosy bedrooms in keeping with the pub's historical origins. And there, of course, are two pictures accompanying that, one of the Wickham Arms and one of the King Alfred.
Trial date set for former mayor. A former mayor of Winchester will face trial for allegedly sexually assaulting a teenage girl during a firework display he was attending as an official guest. Derek Green is alleged to have touched the 16-year-old girl inappropriately over her clothing at the bonfire and fireworks display at North Walls Recreation Ground on November the 5th, 2022. The 67-year-old of Battery Hill, Stanmore, yesterday pleaded not guilty to a charge of sexual assault when he appeared at Bristol Crown Court. Green faces trial next year, with recorder Donald Tate fixing a 4-day trial beginning on March the 10th, 2025. Excuse me. The defendant was released on unconditional bail. Mr. Green became the 823rd Mayor of Winchester when he was appointed to the role in May 2022, but later stood down.
Plumber's encounter with escaped cat goes viral. A Winchester plumber has gone viral after posting a video of him accidentally letting a cat out of a house. Scott McKendry shared the video on Facebook on February the 3rd. The two-minute clip, recorded by a Ring doorbell camera, shows Scott attempting to pick up and return the cat, Bertie, to the property after he believed he had accidentally let the feline out. However, it turns out the plumber had picked up the wrong cat by mistake, adding a twist to the tale. Scott of McKendry Plumbing and Heating told the Chronicle, "I had told a few people and they all laughed about it and everyone was saying, you just have to ask for the Ring doorbell footage. I posted it and it's gone mad since." In the post on Facebook, the plumber wrote, "Plumber versus Bertie the cat. I had to share this incident. My instructions were not to let the cat outside under any circumstances. And then, oh no, he's out, and I don't want to be the plumber that lost the cat." And that's accompanied by a picture of a desperate-looking plumber clutching a big, black, furry cat who obviously doesn't want to be clutched. And it's extremely funny.
Oh, that's a lovely story to finish with. Thank you, Daphne. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
Paul Newman.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns. Thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.